welcome to the Hometown Real Estate Heroes Podcast. My name is Mitch Steven, and I am the founder, the sponsor, and sometimes even the host of this podcast. And this podcast is designed specifically to help you achieve your financial freedom, no matter where you have to go to find that independence. Our mission is to help you fire your boss and quit your job so that you can free up 2,600 hours a year to find out who you're supposed to be and to become the person you are supposed to become on this planet. So I invite you to subscribe, like, and share so that you can watch others that are on their way or have already accomplished this financial independence and are well on their way to becoming the person they are supposed to be. If you know of a guest that should be on this podcast, please go to 1000houses.com. That's 1000houses.com/podcast2. That's the number 2, /apply.
Welcome to the Hometown Real Estate Heroes Podcast. Today, we are excited to be speaking with Mitch Steven. He is the founder of 1000 Houses, and we're super excited to have him here. He is also where you can get access to this podcast. So we're excited to have him here. We're excited to kick off this podcast and excited to talk to Mitch about real estate, his business, and kind of what makes him tick. So thank you so much for joining us today, Mitch.
Brenda, it's my pleasure.
Yeah. So first of all, why don't you just go ahead and start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and share your story. How did you decide on this business path? What created this need for this business?
I spent a long time trying to find myself. I was a serial entrepreneur, still am. I went through a lot of entrepreneurial efforts that didn't make it or didn't cut the grade or I just wasn't good at. So along the way, I got down to some very final choices and real estate was one of them. And you know, lo and behold, the last one you try is the one you're supposed to be at. So I bought a couple of properties to live in and then ended up selling them, making more money in one sale than I made in my whole year as a bartender, which I always had a bartending job while I was trying to invent the new business of the month. And I thought maybe I should look into real estate. So that's kind of how I started that.
Yeah. So then tell us a little bit about 1000 Houses then. What was the need there? Why did you get started with that? Why are we, what kind of was the impetus to kind of grow this business and kind of move forward with, kind of being, being the bank rather than the landlord? What was kind of the impetus for that?
Well, I've bought a house every 4 to 5 days in or about my hometown of San Antonio, Texas for over 2 decades. So along the way, people wanted to know how I did that. I had a real special niche. I was buying houses with OPM or private money, other people's money, 100% with their money. And then I was selling the properties for 2 times what I had purchased them for. And then I was selling that property with seller financing. And I was setting up my buyers on 30-year fixed 10% notes. And so I was the bank and I wasn't a landlord. I had cash flow. They would send in the money for their mortgage payment. And then I had to send in a check to my private lender, but I would keep the spread in between. And it turned out to be very unique because unlike a landlord, I'm the bank. And I have no responsibilities for the house. There's no liabilities. You know, as a landlord, you're responsible for everything that goes wrong between the front mailbox and the back fence and everything in between. As the mortgage collector, you're just responsible to collect the check. And if the air conditioner breaks or the hot water heater goes down or the roof leaks, it's not my house. I sold it to the person who's living in it that's sending me the mortgage payment. And so the money sticks in my bank account. I found it to be a very unique, a very dependable, and a very durable form of cash flow. Not to mention the fact that the people that wanted to get into my houses had to give me at least 10% down, which averages $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, $20,000, depending on the price of the house, maybe more. And that's the real glue that makes everything run smooth. You know, a landlord collects the first month's rent and a deposit equal to the first month's rent, you know, $3,000 or $4,000, and they've got their whole hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of asset being occupied by this person who really has nothing to lose and has a different mindset than an owner has. So I really started to gravitate and to multiply my efforts in the seller financing strategy because it seemed to work better than being a landlord. And I have been both.
Okay, very nice. So with doing this sort of seller finance thing, I imagine there are some obstacles that you have to overcome. What are some of the things that you run into, the difficulties, the stumbling blocks that come along with doing that seller finance? I mean, like you said, you're financing, you're doing the seller finance. So what happens if somebody doesn't pay or, you know, something, or how do you decide who is going to be a good fit? You know, who do you lend the money to? So I imagine these are some of the obstacles you have to overcome when using your model.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of the obstacles in the seller financing strategy are not any different than the obstacles for any strategy. The first one is how do you find the funds to fund all these deals? So learning how to raise private money, learning how to find private money that works well with your strategy. You know, fix and flip money or short-term money doesn't work for a 30-year strategy. You know, you have to find a different color of money. So the number one roadblock for most people at any strategy is, where do I find more and more and more money? You know, because you may even have a little bit of money to start your own business, but no matter who you are, generally you run out of your money pretty quick. So in order to keep running and to keep going, we have to find OPM or other people's money. And for those of you who are not bankable, then don't worry, because you don't need banks either. Private money is a whole different breed. I know a lot about that. I have $26 million in private money out on these streets right now today. So on the first of the month, in a few days, I'll be writing principal and interest checks on $26 million, all of which is non-recourse, collateral only, fixed rate, you know, nice loan to me and my property. So that's number one. Number two, of course, there's some state and federal guidelines you'd have to go to make sure that you manage no matter what you're doing. Right. This strategy of seller financing has some caveats that you need to pay attention to. And then as far as qualifying the people that go in, we want to make sure that there's a reasonable reason to believe that they can make the payments no matter how much down payment they have. We need to see that there's still some way to make the payments, because we don't want to look predatory. I mean, we don't just want the down payment and hope they fail. I mean, I want the down payment, but I also want to do a deal where they're going to end up with the house, you know, at the end of the day, and everything's going to work the way that it's planned for both people. So there are some specific things that we do to ensure that we have the best chance of creating that win-win situation for both the buyer and for me, the seller.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool thing to kind of move forward with. Now, something that you said really stood out to me. You mentioned non-recourse. And I think that it's important to let folks know, if they're going to do something like this, how important that non-recourse piece is to the puzzle. So can you talk about that a little bit, and how do you go ahead and do that as sort of that non-recourse is kind of a risk management strategy?
Absolutely. It all lies within the structure of the deal and the security of the lender. I only allow my lender to go in at a maximum of 65% of what I can seller finance the house for. So just for easy math, we'll say $100,000 house. The most I'll let them loan me on that house in a first lien position is $65,000. Now, that's just the maximum. I average only borrowing 58% or $58,000 on a $100,000 house. That's a pretty risk-free or pretty protected position for a lender to be in. So at the end of the day, the lender is saying, well, I'm either going to get paid as agreed by Mitch on this property, or I'm going to get the property. So if he's paid as agreed, of course, everything looks great. But if he gets the property back, what does that look like? So if he's only loaning $58,000 to $65,000 on a $100,000 house, the lender will go, wow, I'm probably better off if he doesn't pay me and I get the property, you know? So, yeah. So at that point, the lender will want in. Some lenders will say, well, you're going to personally guarantee the note, aren't you? To which I say, well, no.
No.
And then they say, you don't believe in your strategy enough. If you don't believe in it enough to sign personally, why should I loan you the money? I said, well, no. It has nothing to do with whether I believe in my strategy. I sign my name all the time. I'll sign my name at the bank. I've signed my name at the bank for millions. I owe millions to a bank right now. But when I sign my name as a personal guarantee, they're giving me right now today 3.6% interest on a 15-year loan. If you want to give me 3.6% interest, I'll sign my name all day long. You want to get paid 7, 8, 9%? You got to share in the catastrophic downside risk with me. You know, you don't get to make 8, 9, 10% in today's market for nothing. You have to share part of that risk with me. And the risk is, if I can't pay you, then you're going to get the property. Now, my promise to every private lender is, and I look them all right in the eyes and tell them every single time, I want you to understand, when you make this loan on this property, I have two rights every day of my life that I'm associated with you and that I owe you money. I have two rights. And that right is to pay as agreed or to walk my position in this property over to you and hand it to you. So if I own the house, I have the right to walk and hand you the deed any day I want. If I have a note on that house, I have a right to walk the note down and assign that note to you. Whatever that payer inside the house is paying me, I have the right to hand it to you and walk away. And under those two options, there's no way that I can fail or besmirch my name. You know, there's no way. And my promise is, if I ever had to do that, which, by the way, I have never given a house back to anyone ever in my life, over 2,000 houses in my career, 27 years in the business, 50, about 65 private lenders in my history. Most of them stay with me for years and decades. My longest one's been with me 30 years. They don't loan me money because I brought them houses and handed them the problem. The day I do that's the day they won't be a private lender for me. The business is lucrative enough. The options are so plentiful for me as an expert that there's no reason in the world that any of my problems should ever become the problems of my private lender. Have I lost money on houses? I've lost money on 6 houses in my entire career.
Wow.
Fortunately, not all in the same month. Fortunately, not all in the same year. And so when I'm going through my life, if there's a problem house and it happens, then I settle up with my problem that month. Instead of making $100,000 that month, maybe I'll only profit $70,000 that month. But I handle my problems one problem at a time, and as they happen, never letting them stack up, and never even informing my lender that there was ever a problem. They just get their payments as agreed. They get paid off as agreed.
Yeah. So I like that. So those numbers can seem very scary to a lot of people, a thousand houses or a large $26 million. So what are some of the systems that you set in place to kind of manage everything? Because that's a lot of moving parts. That's a lot going on. So are there systems that you use to kind of grow that business and keep that business running smoothly so that you can go ahead and handle those problems as they come up, and so that you can make sure that all of your private lenders do get that money on time? So do you have some systems that you put in place to kind of help manage that business?
Well, first of all, Miranda, let's just start out by saying that you don't start off at these numbers. You start off with tiny, tiny, tiny numbers. There was a day that I only had $100,000 in private money and only had 4 houses, you know, I mean, So these systems and you know, I got acclimated to larger and larger numbers as I needed to. And we brought in people or brought in software as the business demanded, you know, that it needed to happen. And today, you know, we manage all these properties through the mortgage office, or TMO, which is a professional note servicing software. It cost about $27,000. I couldn't have dreamed of buying this in my early career. It cost about $5,000 to $7,000 to train a couple of people on it. But it does all the work. It you know, when you come in the morning, the late notices are printed out on the printer. You walk in and go, oh, I guess those five people are late on their payments, you know, because I got to mail these letters out. You know, they go to level two, level three, level four, all the way up to foreclosure. That software does all the year-end reporting. You know, it spits out checks, you know, on the first of the month when we hit the button. I mean, you know, payments on $26 million start rolling out of the computer, and someone's got to start signing checks, you know. So really, I was naming those numbers to show you where I'm at.
Right.
And no matter who you are, there's a bigger gun, a faster gun, someone who's done more, probably within a mile of you. You know, I'm aware of that. I also know that there's a lot of people that wish they were in the position I was in. So I go through life with a hand down and a hand up. I'm trying to help some other people get up from the levels they're at, closer to my level or at my level or even past me. And then I have my hand up and I'm talking to people who have done way more than me, that have been way more successful than I have. And I'm trying to learn to get to the next level every day too. There's always another level. It doesn't matter who you are or where you're at. There's always another level. And whether you decide to go there or not is up to you personally, but there will always be another level. So I have really good people that support me. My central office administrator has been with me for 27 years, closing every deal coming in and closing every deal going out. You know, we've had to get her a personal assistant because at some point the business got too big for her. We had to buy this software because at some point the business got too big for both of them. You know, so it's a growing process, but don't think for 1 minute that you have to do 100 houses a year or you know, by now it's 2,000 houses. I named my company 1,000, my educational company, 1000houses.com, because at, you know, 10 years ago, no, 12 years ago, I had done the math. I went through my mini storage. I found all the files. I had someone count them, and I divided by how long I'd been in business, and I had bought a house about every 4 to 5 days. Recently, I went back and did it again. There was over 2,000 transactions in that self-storage unit, and wow. I did the math, and I've bought a house about every 4 to 5 days now for you know, over two decades. So, it, you know, you can do one house a month or one house a year and change your financial perspective. So don't think you have to be big, because you don't.
Yeah. So I really like that. So what were some of the things that you, so you mentioned that you kind of started adding these other things, adding team members, adding software, all of that stuff as you started growing. So what were some of the things that you've done? Now you talked a little bit about relationships, about having that hand down and that hand up, and developing good relationships. Like you said, in your office, you've got somebody you've been working with for, you know, for more than 20 years. So, really, is that kind of relationship piece what really kind of helps fuel your growth as you move forward?
Well, all you ever have in business to begin with is your integrity and your relations. That's all you have. And without those two things, it's, you're always starting over. You're having to move town and start over to another place where you're anonymous. So you only have those two things. What consistency will buy you is a super huge, ever expanding foundation of relationships and people that know you're integral over years, over years, over years, over years. I mean, you don't just walk out the door and get $26 million worth of private money. You don't just walk out the door and buy 100 houses a year. You know, it takes some time, and it takes consistency. You know, like, it doesn't work if you make your payments most of the time. You have to be consistent, make your payments all the time. That's what makes people want to give you more money or introduce you to their aunt or their uncle or their neighbor across the street that just won the lottery. You know, that's what does it. And over time, you start to meet those people. I mean, do I know anybody that won the lottery? No. Have I met three or four of them? Yeah, because they got referred to me, you know?
Right.
And trying to keep people in your business, then you have to set up plans where they can grow with you. As the business grows, they can grow too. Because if you're just trying to hold everybody down all the time, then eventually they go away. And when they go away, all their legacy knowledge about your business and how it runs goes with them. And it's very painful.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you make about, you know, and that's good business practice, whether you're doing real estate or starting any other business.
Business, right?
Yeah. That's really good.
And so also running my business with minimal employees, most of my people get paid, or the bulk of my payroll is paid upon success. They get paid when the money hits the table. When they bring the money to the table, we all get paid. They don't bring the money to the table, I don't owe anything, because I have been in businesses where you're on a hamster wheel and you're running to meet payroll on Friday and it was a bad week and the money didn't come in and you still got to make payroll. It's a sickening, sickening trap. And I swore I would never get on it again. So all my salespeople, my two salespeople, they get paid when they find buyers with the down payments, they get paid out of the down payments. My acquisition people, they get paid when I borrow the money to buy the house. I borrow the money for the house, and that includes my fee to them, because they got, you know, that's what it cost me to find a house. It's not only the cost of the house, but I got to pay the realtor. I got to pay someone who found me a house, because they don't go find me houses for free. So I borrow the money for the whole thing. So when the money hits the table from the private lender, I pay. There's only two people on payroll, and that's my central administrator and her assistant. And so everything else, that's a very small payroll compared to what I pay every month.
Right.
out to people who work for me. But I think the trick is to use as many subcontractors and paid upon success individuals as you can in your business, and only have salaries for those who absolutely you can't. There's no way around a salary, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. That's some really good advice for business as well as real estate. If somebody wants to get started in real estate, what is your number one piece of advice that you would give them?
Well, you know, 27 years ago was a lot different than it is now. Today, we can find so much free on the internet, multitudes of things free. So I would say, get on the internet, get all the free, go to the webinars, the blogs, the podcasts, learn as much as you can about all the different strategies. Then start to narrow it down to the strategy that you think fits you the best, that fits your market the best, that's best acclimated for you and where you're at. And then eventually hone it down to one.
Yeah.
And then quit looking at everything else. Drill down on all the information you can find free about that one. Find out who the players are in that one strategy across the country. Who's the best? Who seems to be the best at this strategy across the country? If you pick seller financing, you may, in your search, very likely come across me. I'm probably one of the top seller financed creative real estate coaches out there. But there may be some others, and it doesn't matter. You take a look at whoever's there now and start to see, who is it you want to be like? What is this guy like? What is Mitch Steven like? Is he a guy that I want to be like on the field and off the field? And has he done, or is he accomplished what I wish I could accomplish? And is he doing it actively right now? If the answers are yes to all those things, then you probably want to start looking at, how much does that cost to get that guy? You know, how much does it, what does his courses cost? But if you have the shiny object syndrome and you're constantly bouncing from one seminar to the next, moving from strategy to strategy, first of all, you're just going to get overwhelmed with information. You get paralyzed by everything that you're learning. And it'll all be good, but we can't be good at seven different things at one time in the beginning.
Right.
Now, 27 years, I can wholesale a house at the drop of a hat. I can buy a house subject to drop of a hat. Can I do adverse possession and just move into a house that I don't own because there's certain things right about it? Yeah, I can. And I know how. But I became an expert at one thing first for a couple of years till I knew it backwards and forwards. And then I'd say, okay, I'm going to add this tool to my tool belt. Now, how does this lathe work? You know, how does this machining board, how does it work? Right. And then I'd concentrate on that. And I work on that for a year or so till I knew I had it down pat. And then I'd, you know, go look at a different strategy and say, I'm going to put that. The reason why you need to have as many strategies as possible is because when you're sending out, when you're advertising or you're spending money on leads, a lot of leads come in that don't fit just your primary strategy. You may need to take that lead and say, well, this is just obviously a wholesale house. I'm just going to wholesale it. Because those leads cost money and you need to be able to capitalize off those leads whenever possible, because whether you do anything with that lead or not, it costs you money.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because being able to diversify a little bit and get started, I think is really good. But I really like how you point out, you know, figure out the one that best fits you, start there. And then once you've got that down, that's when you start, you know, branching out and diversifying. But I really like that idea of figuring out what works for you and how to move forward with that and make that successful before you start doing the shiny objects. I love that. So,
and also like, no matter what strategy you pick, if you're super ADD, like yours truly here or whatever, and one thing just doesn't seem to keep you focused, you know, like you always have to have a couple of balls in the air. And there are a lot of people in this business like that. Then pick something that you're going to study that year in addition to that one strategy that you need to accomplish to better this strategy. Like you're in the, you want to talk about seller financing houses. Great. But that's not enough for you. Then learn, take a course on raising private money, because it fits hand in glove with this. The better you get at raising private money, the better that your strategies, the more deals you're going to be able to do. So be careful about the things you're picking. Are they pulling against each other? Well, I can do this strategy or do that strategy. Well, I'm going to do them both. Well, now they're both pulling you like this. Or you say, I'm going to pick this strategy, but I'm going to also learn this other talent, and it's congruent and it's in line. And a lot of people get torn in a bunch of different directions, and it kills them.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So, well, thank you so much for joining us today, Mitch. Once again, this is Mitch Steven. He is at 1000houses.com. And how can people listening best get in touch with you so that they can learn a little bit more about you and maybe even get a little help with coaching and learning more about the business?
Well, of course, at 1000houses.com, there's my podcast where I'm the host, and I'm about to go on my 500th interview. All different kinds of topics. I started a YouTube channel about 6 months ago, 1000houses.com/YouTube. But of course, you can find all this at 1000houses.com. I'm putting out 10 minutes worth of content every single day for a year, every single workday for a year. So 5 days a week, I'm getting a 10-minute segment. And it's completely free. If you want to contact me personally, I'm at mitch@1000houses.com. That'll hit my office, and when they need me to address whatever it is, then I address it. If you want a consultation about coaching, you can also go to mitch@1000houses.com. And let me tell you, the consultation is never any pressure. I want to be on a winning team. Money's not the issue for me anymore. And at some right. point in time, when you make enough money, you got to have a higher reason. I want to help some people that I think I can help be able to fire their boss or to do whatever it is they want it, the next step for them. So whether they want to fire their boss or they want to learn how to get themselves out of the middle of their business so they can buy their time back, I mean, I can help with that. So I just want to have a 45-minute conversation with you to see if we're a fit. Because if I don't think we're a fit, I'm not taking your money. You can't. If you send it to me, I'll send it back. Because it's not all about that. The only reason I charge money at all is if I don't find the person who's ambitious enough to go to the Super Bowl with me. They'll quit halfway.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So only reason there's money involved at all, because I used to do it for free, but I was getting very depressed because no one was even making it to the playoffs, you know? And I was telling my friends, I said, you know, I wanted to give back and I'm doing all this stuff for free, but nobody can score a touchdown anywhere. I mean, they're not even trying. And they said, well, you got to raise the price of admission and then you'll start finding the serious people. And I did. And ever since that day, you know, all those people see that money come back, but they have right. to be a certain caliber. And it's in correlation with a caliber of people that are willing to commit and make a sacrifice. And that kind of lets you know they're serious on that level. So let me talk to you about four or five more things. And if we can get those four or five more things, maybe we're going to be on the same team together, you know, and make a run at the Super Bowl.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense. So yeah, once again, Mitch Steven, thank you so much for joining us. Head over to 1000houses.com and remember to keep checking back for more episodes of Hometown Real Estate Heroes.
This is Mitch Steven, and I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning into the Hometown Real Estate Heroes podcast. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please go to 1000houses.com/podcast, /apply. We invite all our listeners to share our Hometown Real Estate Heroes podcast, and also we'd appreciate it if you'd rate and or review our show wherever you listen to your podcast. It would be greatly appreciated. It is our mission to spotlight local real estate entrepreneurs that are killing it in their market and to highlight their strategies and their personal story. It is our intention to help real estate investors learn and grow. Please be sure to subscribe because we are sure that you will find very valuable nuggets in our content-driven episodes. This podcast is my way of giving back, and I would like to personally thank all of the Hometown Real Estate Heroes that have participated or that intend to participate. And I'd like to thank all of our listeners and hope that you tune in and share this with your friends and family often. Thank you very much. We're out of here.